Good afternoon. The time is 2:00. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, May 8th. I'm Ray Graff.
And I'm Jackie Orchard. Today we're talking sweet treats and baking. On the line to answer your baking questions is Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. If you have a question about baking at home or a recipe you want to share, give us a call.
Oh, it's my line. Yeah, then used to be my show, but now this is my line. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you got a baking question, you can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Oh, that's still my line. Ah, I guess it is my show. Baking sweets. Our producer, Jackie Orchard, eating a lot of cookies. What could be more exciting than this? It's a Food Friday. Stand by after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff.
And I'm Jackie Orchard. Today on Food Friday, we are going to sweet talk you. On the line to help us is Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York.
Anthony has a background as a pastry chef, wedding cake designer, and restaurant chef and manager. After graduating from Syracuse University's Newhouse School of Journalism, he moved to San Francisco, where he was influenced by the Bay Area's culinary movement. Anthony worked in the pastry kitchen at Ironwood Cafe under Ann Belden. He was a pastry chef at Wolfgang Puck's Pastrio and a managing partner of La Paloma Bakery Cafe in Eureka Valley, San Francisco.
Anthony then joined forces with Ross Wasserman, and Brimstone Bakery was born in 2018. Brimstone Bakery features a roster of cookies, tea breads, brownies, bars, cakes, and a host of signature breakfast pastries like scones, sticky buns, and quiche. And we have most of those things in the studio with us, and we will be tasting them. Brimstone Bakery serves customers directly on its website and through its recently opened drive-up takeaway window each Saturday from 10 to 2.
If you have a question on baking today or some sweets, maybe you want to share us a recipe, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Anthony Liberto, welcome to the show, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Ray and Jackie. It's great to be here.
Very excited. You graduated from Newhouse School of Journalism. And then came the baking. I got to tell you something. Our Jim Lavoulis is a Newhouse grad. I've never seen him bake one thing. How did you go from journalism to baking on the West Coast?
I'll tell you, my poor mother, you know, she thought I was going to be the next Ted Koppel, and I turned out to be like, you know, a pastry chef. Well, I moved to San Francisco shortly after graduating from college, and I was actually working for a newspaper at the time and editing, writing. And I was just, I mean, I'd always been into food as a kid, and I was just captivated by the food scene. And I just, you know, I was sort of a weekend warrior in terms of cooking. I didn't really know how to bake at all. And I met this woman who taught me in her kitchen how to bake, Ann Belden, who's sort of like my fairy godmother in terms of the baking world. And, you know, that's sort of how I started my culinary career. And I've crossed over between the savory and the sweet world, which has been great for me.
That's so interesting. Now, you basically, if you're telling me the whole story here, you really didn't train as a pastry chef until you got in the business. And then after some tutelage, you ended up as a pastry chef for Wolfgang Puck's place. How did that happen?
Well, I didn't know how to bake at all. In fact, I was a terrible baker. I sort of could work my way around the kitchen. My grandmother was an amazing cook. My mother is a very, very good cook. I grew up in an Italian-American household, so food was a big part of what we did. So I was always cooking. You know, my parents worked, so I was always the guy that was making dinner at night. I was in charge of dinner. And I moved to San Francisco, and it was painfully obvious to me that I didn't know anything about baking. So I somehow managed to convince this woman to hire me, and she took me under her wing and literally showed me how to bake. And then the next job that I got, they needed someone who could bake and also be a savory chef. And then I decided that I wanted to really focus on being a pastry chef. So I was an assistant pastry chef for Wolfgang Puck for several years, and then had other jobs, and then opened a small bakery cafe of my own in San Francisco in the early to mid-90s.
I got to say, the stuff that you sent, and thank you for sending it in advance of the program, with this social distancing, we haven't had a nibble in weeks on this program, and you sent so much stuff, and it's amazing. And you said you've done some savory cooking as well. Do you find that there is more science to baking and more artistry to being a chef, or do you think it's all the same?
Well, I think it's actually, I think there's more science to baking, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's definitely science to the savory world and learning how to do specific cooking techniques. Baking, you have to sort of pray to the baking gods. And if the baking gods don't oblige, you can have, you know, a disaster. So there's always those factors. I think what we do at Brimstone, and candidly what I think we do so well, is that we cross over. We introduce savory flavors in our sweets, and it gives them another dimension. You know, it's not really just about eating something that's sweet for us. You know, we think about what the texture should be. Like, I think Jackie had the blueberry oatmeal and coconut cookie. So that's basically our take on an oatmeal cookie, which everybody has an oatmeal cookie. There's millions of them floating around the universe, but ours has blueberries, and there's blueberry and lemon go very well together. So there's lemon zest and lemon extract. The coconut gives it this sort of softer, chewier quality to it. So it really is one of our most popular cookies. People love them. And for me, having developed that, I'm delighted.
But Anthony, okay, if we're going to talk about incorporating savory flavors into baking, we're clearly going to talk about the Chipotle brownie.
Oh, yeah, they were good.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So the Chipotle brownie really, you know, is hats off to my business partner, Ross Wasserman, who really, you know, I'd always done a brownie, but then we wanted to expand the canon of brownies. And he said, well, what if we tried Chipotle? Well, you know, Chipotle is a, you know, a South American, it's a Latin chili. Mexico produces them. Mexico chocolate comes from Mexico. So what we like about this brownie is it's sort of obvious. You taste the brownie and the first thing you get is salt because there's sea salt on top.
Yep.
That's
and
my
then
favorite
you dive
part.
Into it and you get this sort of wave of rich, creamy, delicious milk chocolate that kind of coats your mouth. And you think, it's over. Okay. And then at the very end, you get this sort of this little bit of heat at the back of your throat. And it's this, you just went on a little trip. You just had a brownie and you went on a little journey. And that's really what we try to do at Brimstone. I mean, I think many chefs try to do that. I think we try to do it with each one of our products, that there's a little something to it that you wouldn't expect. For if I can just tell you one other thing, the cherry white chocolate and pistachio biscotti have a little, so those are all very Mediterranean flavors generally, and we added a little Turkish kofta, which is actually a spice that has cinnamon and sort of baking spices in it, but it's also used in the savory world to make Turkish kefta or meatballs.
Well, we are we have to take a quick break here, Anthony. Anthony
okay.
Liberto
okay.
is here from Brimstone Bakery, and we're going to try that biscotti. I like the way you said it, biscotti. You know, out here in these parts, we say we got some biscotti. And we'll try some food. We'll take some calls, 800-348-2551. We'll be back on a Food Friday. Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. Ray Graff along with Jackie Orchard. We're joined today by Anthony Liberto of Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. How long have you been over there in Sharon Springs?
We actually opened in September of 2018. So we've been going a little over a year now, like a year and a half.
In truth, there's better money in cooking pastries than in journalism, right?
I'm not sure. It's a lot harder on the feet, I can tell you that.
All right, we tried the white chocolate cherry and pistachio biscotti.
I'm actually still chewing it right now.
It's really, really tasty.
It's really good. So what is, Anthony, what is this spice that's in here?
The Turkish spice?
The Turkish kofta, which is used to make meatballs in the Middle East.
A little meatball biscotti to start your day.
It really is delicious. Let's grab a call or two here, and then we'll try some more. There are so many different things to try on this Food Friday. Hey, if you have a question at home about baking, we have an expert here, Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs. The number is 800-348-2551. We started out with Mark in Stone Ridge. Mark, you're up.
Thank you very much. Listen, I'm having a serious problem. I cooked up a kabocha squash. I've cooked them up countless times. But this guy was way, way dense, and I need them for an impossible pumpkin pie. So I thought, well, do I add water or do I add something else?
What do you think, Anthony?
Oh, yeah, just add a little water to it. That's totally fine. And then, you know, when you get the consistency that you want, you know, I'm assuming you want it sort of similar to pumpkin or some squash, a little softer. You just measure out what you need and then go ahead and use it as you would the volume you need for your impossible pumpkin pie.
I'd have to put them in a food processor, I guess.
Yeah, that's always best. It's always best. I mean, if you have a food mill, you can do that. If you have a blender, it's a little trickier. But generally speaking, a food processor is the best, I've found,
but
in my experience.
They say you can also use sweet potatoes. Is that true?
It is. You know, if you think about it, they all have sort of the same density or viscosity, as it were. That's if I can just use like a
Very nice.
Scientific
like motor arm.
That's
but
a
they
good
basically,
word, yeah.
They basically all, you know, squash, pumpkin, sweet potatoes. They're generally interchangeable when you're making that sort of custard pie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hey, Mark, thanks a lot for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Joined today by Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York.
Anthony, do you have like an X factor ingredient that you put in your pumpkin pies? Do you have a twist?
Yeah. So you know what I do sometimes? You know, what's funny is the unsung hero with pumpkin is chocolate. They're a great combination. You don't see them a lot, but I like to put, sometimes I put a chocolate glaze and a little bit, I'm a big coconut fan if you haven't noticed. So I'll sometimes do that. And when it sets up, I'll put a little coconut on top. I think chocolate and pumpkin are just the best combo in the world. So I'm a big fan of that.
I have never had a pumpkin chocolate combo. I don't know about that, Anthony.
Yeah, I'll make you my pumpkin cheesecake that has a chocolate cookie crust.
Ooh, see, now we're getting somewhere. Okay.
Now, then we'll discuss.
Okay.
We'll discuss.
Right,
he's setting himself up for a return engagement.
More food.
The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about baking for Anthony Liberto today, Susan is in Pittsfield. Susan.
Hi, I hope you can hear me. I'm on my cell phone.
You're good.
Thank you for taking my call. I pray to the baking gods every time I bake, and I bake frequently, and they have not answered this question. So it's on you guys now. Goose eggs. A friend of mine has brought me 15 goose eggs, and all these people are saying, oh, these are fabulous for this in pastry and that in pastry. And I actually made a very nice pastry cream with them. I made a fabulous chocolate custard-based ice cream with them, and then things started going south. So I don't know, like I made a cake and it was kind of heavy, and I made a coffee ice cream and it was kind of chewy. And the only variables of these things have been the fact that I've been using goose eggs instead of chicken eggs. So I'm wondering, can you use a goose egg the same way you'd use a chicken egg, except for, of course, its size?
That's so interesting. I never even thought of that. Anthony.
Yeah, I would think that you could, but from what I understand, and again, I will tell you, I don't know a ton about this, but I think the goose eggs just have a tremendous they have more fat to them. They have I think that the yolk, the fat part of it, is just much gamier as well, generally speaking. And so here's the thing, it's a little tricky because if you think about the size of a regular egg, and then in that egg, and usually when you bake, you know, you always generally use large eggs. So you have a ratio of the yolk, which is the fat, to the white, which is, you know, the non-fat protein. So when you kind of mess with that with a goose egg, like, I think that might be where you might be having some issues. So the only thing I could think of is to actually, you know, whisk the egg or break the yolk into the white and then measure the volume you would need for a regular large egg. That would be my advice.
Yeah, I've also kind of tried to use them mostly for, like, use them, like, in pastry creams where I only need the yolk and then save the white for something else. Okay, thank you. And do you have any idea, because I always appreciate recipes that come with, like, volume measurements, but they usually don't do that for eggs. Do you have any idea, like, what the equivalent, if I was trying to figure out how much yolk to use from the goose egg, how much is in like regular large egg, like what they weigh?
I think that an egg weighs 2 ounces. I mean, there's a volume to it that I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. So okay. I'd actually love to get back to you on that and do a little bit more research, because I haven't really. It's ironic that you're talking about goose eggs, because we have some geese, some Canadian geese on our property right now, and there seem to be some babies as well. So I'm looking at a geese right now, but I don't know much about their eggs other than that they're hatching right now.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. Anthony Liberto is our guest from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs. Have you ever baked with an ostrich egg?
No, okay. I have not done that yet.
They're a little
not
bigger.
Yet.
They're grapefruit size, and I don't know if it'll work out so well. All right, so where did you grow up?
I grew up in central Pennsylvania, in a small city called Williamsport.
Oh, sure, where the Little League is, yeah.
Little League, indeed, yes.
Well, the only reason I ask, it seems the hustle and bustle of San Francisco is quite a bit different than Sharon Springs, and I just sort of wondered the journey that brought you to that particular spot, which is quite a happening place these days, but just wondered.
Yeah, it's like many things in my life, it's random. My partner and I had just, you know, we'd just gotten married. We're living in New York City, and we decided to take a drive for actually almost 3 years ago to the date for my birthday weekend. And we ended up in Sharon Springs. We got there on Friday, and on Sunday we found a house, and I think 4 days later we put a bid on it. And I had always, you know, really yearned to do the bakery on the East Coast again. And, you know, I love New York City. I'd been doing a lot of catering there, but it was very, very challenging to find the space, the affordable space. And Sharon Springs was the perfect place. And I met my business partner, Ross Wasserman, who I mentioned before, who grew up, his family grew up here. For maybe 125 years. So we were just able to really get the business off the ground and create something. And we're doing quite well. Especially in these challenging times, we're really grateful.
Anthony, let's talk a little bit more about your experience, because I read your bio and I have to say it is lengthy. I mean, you've been on TV shows and TV competitions, New York City, San Francisco. Can you tell us a little bit more about the competitions you've entered and how you won?
Sure, sure. Well, in 2012, I was on a show of the Food Network called Sweet Genius, which is a little like Chopped, where you get sort of crazy mystery ingredients, but you have to make something with it. And there are 3 rounds. And the last round, which was sort of the decisive round for me, was cake, which is kind of my thing. So I had to make a cake that was sort of representative of a beehive, using like green tomatoes and gnocchi and soy sauce. And somehow I made it all work. So I ended up winning that title in 2012, which was really exciting.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Gnocchi and soy sauce in a cake. Please explain. I need to know now.
It sounds like it should be illegal.
Well, what I did was I made a Swiss meringue buttercream with brown sugar, which is a normal thing.
Yeah.
And I thought brown sugar and soy kind of have a similar, there's something strangely compatible about them. So I ended up adding a little bit of soy to my brown sugar, which was kind of delicious.
Ah.
And then I made a chocolate cake. And then I made a filling with pureed green tomatoes and chunks of gnocchi and folded the buttercream into that and layered it with it. And then, it looked like a beehive hairdo. That was how I did it.
There are so many bizarre shows on that food, on those food networks. At least two or three of my daughters watch it. And it's often on when I get home from work, and I get sucked into these shows.
They're so soothing.
You know, you got to cook with Spam and Listerine and something else, and you got to make a meal out of it.
And everyone is such a good critic when they're watching, too. They're like, I wouldn't have done that. Like, people who can't cook.
Yeah. You overdid the Listerine just a little bit, but I like where you're going.
Meanwhile, you're sweating under the lights for like 12 hours doing those shows, so...
Well, we have had Rick Orlando on this program who beat Bobby Flay, and I think he was on Chopped and won that. And the business of these programs, it's amazing.
Well, people are very much interested in food and cooking.
Yeah.
And now, you know, during these challenging times, I see so many people making bread and cooking food, which is really exciting. I love the way that there's just renewed interest in the craft for all of us, which is great. Keeps us on the toes. And I, you know, spend all my day baking, but then I come home and cook dinner as well. So, you know, we're busy.
Yeah.
Anthony, I have to ask you, because this is my favorite show to watch at home. Do you watch The Great British Baking Show?
I have, and it's great.
Do you love it? Oh, it's so good.
I love it.
What, just the accents? What's so great about it?
No, okay, because first of all, I think it's because they all have these KitchenAid mixers in the pastel colors, and like each little stand is like pink or purple or yellow.
Really?
It's so cute.
Is that why you watch it, Anthony? Yes, is that it?
That's why.
They're just so, everyone's so earnest, you know?
Yes, and they're like not mean to each other. It's very supportive.
Let's take another, are you through with
I'm done. All right, I'm done with the Great British
Jackie,
Baking Show.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Bill in Saratoga. Bill, you're on.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a question. Several years ago in Albany area, I got a two-layer chocolate hazelnut cake, and it had raspberry filling like in between it. And I can make a decent chocolate cake part, but I've never been able to get like the hazelnut flavor or the raspberry filling to put between like the two layers. So if you could give me some ideas on that. And another question is, you mentioned adding salt to a chocolate brownie. Should I add salt to the chocolate cake when it comes out? And if so, what kind of salt?
Well, that's a very good question, by the way. So let me just take the first part of it. There is a chocolate that you can buy. It's called Gianduja, and it's basically hazelnut-infused chocolate. So you could very well use that if you wanted to make a chocolate mousse where you would actually get your hazelnut flavor. In terms of raspberry, what I would probably do is use a jam between my layers of chocolate cake. So if I was going to make this cake, I would take a chocolate cake and layer it with maybe a Gianduja chocolate ganache, which is, other than getting the chocolate, it's fairly simple to make. And then layering that with raspberry jam and then your cake, and then finishing the whole cake in probably a more neutral bittersweet chocolate glaze. You could, in fact, sprinkle that with a little molten sea salt on top. But, you know, there's always a limit to the number of flavors, I say. You know, it's like in fashion, they say you get one thing, whether it's like a great belt or a great pair of shoes or a great shirt. But doing all three of them is overkill. So you really want to be careful that the flavors that you choose complement each other. So I think if you have raspberry and hazelnut and chocolate, you're good. I may not introduce sea salt to that, but you certainly could make a regular chocolate cake with, say, a milk chocolate frosting or a caramel buttercream or a caramel filling and use sea salt on top of that.
When you say a jam, like the layers are done, and do I anything to it? Just take it out of the jar and put it on there, and then put the layer on top. Do I have to heat it, the jam, or anything?
I generally just put it in a bowl and kind of whisk it a little bit with a spatula and just break it up a little bit. And then there is another step that they call a jam dam. Which is basically a little ring around the edge of your cake with your ganache. And that basically is like the edge of a swimming pool, and it keeps your jam from oozing out the side of your cake.
Standard.
You can look and Google it, YouTube it. There's tons of amazing. I must tell you, I've been baking for 30 years, but I always look at YouTube videos to figure out how to finish a cake,
yes,
or decorate a cake.
Fix a dishwasher.
So
yeah, that sort of thing. Hey, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. The old jam dam ploy. I like that idea. That's pretty good. Now, you guys do quiches and breakfast stuff as well. And with this lockdown and being, I assume, just carry out or curbside only, how do you go about doing breakfast things like that?
Well, we're pretty lucky because we have several. When Ross and I decided to open the bakery, we knew that it's not like opening a bakery in New York City where you have, or Albany, or more metropolitan area where you have, you know, millions of people walking past every day. And we knew that the winters could be a little slow. So we wanted to create a revenue, constant revenue stream. So we are a Beekman 1802 artisan. So we're making jams and jellies for them. So that's one thing that we do. We also have a lot of wholesale clients as well in the area that we make scones and quiche and all of our tea breads and our sticky buns for. And we do deliveries and drop-offs in the area for those. When this happened, you know, I think Ross, my business partner, looked at our window and said, well, that would be a great takeout window because we're in an old boarding house and we have a U-shaped driveway.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, with the power of social media, we started promoting our window, and it's from 10 to 2 every Saturday in Sharon Springs, and we're doing really well.
What a cool idea.
It's great. And so we do, this week's quiche is Gruyere and roasted asparagus, and we also do ham and cheddar.
That's
good.
We
do lemon blueberry scones. We do ham and cheddar scones as well. We do really delicious sticky buns that I was rushing to finish before I had my show with you guys today.
Well, you know what? What you prepared for us, we haven't even
so
talked
much.
About it, a tiny fraction of it. I love the idea of having a nice ham and cheddar. The asparagus, you kind of lost me, but the ham and cheddar.
Yeah, I don't want vegetables in my scone.
And I got to tell you, in a little inside baseball here, Jackie Orchard writes the script, and she phonetically spelled quiche, K-E-E-S-H, for me, because she knows I'm a Luddite. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff with Jackie Orchard. We're joined today by Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. The phone number to call if you have a question about baking, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpopwamc.org.
And we do have an email question from Mark. He says, I love a good banana cream pie. Who doesn't, Mark?
Right.
But they never last for more than a day. And some supermarkets are starting to sell banana cream pies that not only stay on the shelf for days, but also don't need to be refrigerated. This scares me. What is your secret to making the best banana cream pie?
Hmm.
Oh, wow. Well, that I would just say that, Mark, you should be scared for sure.
Why?
You
know,
anything, yeah, lots of preservatives. Not something that you want to probably partake in too much. I mean, if you're making a banana cream pie, you're making a custard, it has bananas in it. I make mine generally with a whipped cream topping as well, and it should be refrigerated. And, you know, whipped cream, unless you stabilize it, won't necessarily, you know, keep its shape for a long time. So it's only going to last for a day or two.
How do you stabilize it?
You freeze it?
You can freeze it, but you can also add a little gelatin to it.
Oh. By the
way.
Something
called stabilized whipped cream.
While we were in the break, because it's tough to chew crunchy things during the program.
It's very crunchy.
I had some of the dark chocolate orange biscotti, and I got to say, this is unlike any flavor combination I've had in a biscotti before. Very nicely done.
Great, thank you. We use very, very high quality candied orange peel in that. We also use Valrhona cocoa as well, which is a processed Dutch processed cocoa powder.
And the biscotti in general, now we've had two different ones here on this program so far. They're great because they're crunchy, but they don't break your teeth. You can go a little too far with the crunchiness, but these are perfect.
Mm-hmm,
well
I
done.
Agree. Yeah.
Yeah, they are like my grandmother's biscotti. And if I can just aspire generally to cook like a grandmother or my grandmother, I'm fine with that. I mean, a lot of my earliest food memories or baking memories really come from my grandmother. So I feel like those cookies really honor that tradition.
Right. On the count of three, let's say biscotti like Anthony says it.
Ready?
1, 2, 3. Biscotti.
That's, you know what?
It sounds good.
We're classing up the joint
yes,
now.
Yes, we are.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Nancy in North Adams, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's springtime here, and rhubarb is coming on. And our rite of passage at my house was this beautiful sour cream rhubarb cake that my mother would make. And she would also make rhubarb pie and rhubarb sauce that we would serve over vanilla ice cream. And I make all three of them. What is one of your favorite recipes or recipe that you could share with us to do something else with rhubarb?
Hmm.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm excited because I have a big rhubarb plant on my property as well. One of the things that we do is we actually make a rhubarb jam that's a raspberry and rhubarb that's delicious. So that's one of my favorite things. We also do, I do this sort of upside down cake. Basically, it's a classic vanilla cake that's made with buttermilk and vanilla that I've been making for a very long time. And I love to actually, you know, do an upside down cake with chunks of rhubarb. And, you know, of course, you have your like sticky caramely goo on top of that. And that's really one of my favorite things to do as well, is a rhubarb upside down cake.
Sounds great. I do have a recipe for rhubarb punch. And you make the syrup and you can freeze it and have it all year long. So that's great. Thank you for sharing.
Nancy, thank you.
Thank you.
Anthony Liberto is our guest today from Brimstone Bakery.
Anthony, I have some friends in Albany who are listening to the show live right now, and they are texting me questions. And one of the questions is, what is something that a novice baker can make that is still pretty impressive looking once it's done?
That's a very, very good question. Well, I would say you could, if you were a novice baker, you could do a baked Alaska with a brownie and a scoop of ice cream and make a little bit of meringue and then just take a blowtorch. And
a novice baker is not going to have a blowtorch.
Because all the kids have blowtorches.
Just go to your friendly local blowtorch store and pick one up.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, you could actually finish it in the oven. But you know what? I think with a tiny bit of encouragement, a novice baker could make that and really impress somebody. Because it's really just a brownie, and it's a scoop of ice cream, and it's a little meringue, which is generally pretty simple to make. So.
That's all a baked Alaska is? It looks more complicated. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah,
it's like a bar, right?
That's, you know, a little cheap version, but
We had a guest on this program not too long ago.
I was
ago,
here for the Baked Alaska episode.
And the lady made Baked Alaska, and she brought out a blowtorch, and I almost had a coronary on the air
she
here.
She smoked us out in the studio.
And the smoke was wafting up to the smoke detector, and I just thought the whole show was going to come to a crashing end.
Oh, that was
pumpkin
ice cream.
I promise you can make it without a blowtorch. How's that? How just for anybody that has blowtorch phobia out there.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, Anthony LeBron. Roberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. Of all the things that you make, and it looks like cookies, just the sweet stuff. You have cookies, you have breads.
Biscotti.
You have biscotti, brownies, and then the savory stuff. What's the toughest thing that it was for you to master?
The sticky buns have been a little bit of a challenge.
Why?
But I think we mastered it. It's the ratio really of dough to a pan and dough to sticky stuff and having them rise properly. And then, you know, when you turn it out, you have to turn it out at a specific time because if you do it too soon, the caramel goo that's so delicious will run everywhere. If you wait too long, it could crystallize.
Yeah.
Sugar often crystallizes. So that's required. And, you know, everything... You know, if you have a sticky bun, there's certain characteristics that you want. If you have a quiche, there's certain things you think about a quiche. So it's really like, again, honoring those components and making sure that they all complement each other and work in the way that they're supposed to work.
You know, it goes back to what I was saying about science being so important when you bake. If you follow the directions to the letter, you stand a much better chance of having success.
Yes, yes. Don't experiment at first. You know, do a recipe a few times, and then if you want to alternate it or you change it, adjust it to your liking, you certainly can. But everything is different, and certain things have different properties. We experience that a lot when we make our jams and jellies. Certain things tend to basically gel faster than others or more efficiently. So, you know, we have to work with that a lot. And that is one of the more challenging things that I think we do at Brimstone Bakery is our jams and jellies, because we do them in small batches. We do a lot of them, and they do require a little finessing.
Go ahead.
Because we do them with a lot of different properties, not just fruits, but we also bake an Omegang beer jelly as well.
Interesting.
Which is delicious. And then... we also make a pink champagne jelly. We make a strawberry balsamic jam with black pepper that I think I sent you as well.
Yes.
And Ray called dibs immediately on that. He's like, don't even look at it.
All right, we'll jump back on the phones here. This email came in from Dan. Dan was wondering if there's a big difference between using pastry flour or all-purpose flour for pie crust. Dan writes, I've never used pastry flour, was wondering if it's worth buying. And that is from Dan.
Oh, well, that's a really good question, Dan. I don't use pastry flour for that. I would tend to use pastry flour more for a cake. So basically, you have bread flour, which has a lot of gluten in it because you need gluten. You need structure when you make a dough. So it rises properly and you get a nice, delicious crust and you get this wonderful sort of texture of the bread when it's done on the inside. When you are making pastry, I just generally use regular all-purpose flour.
Okay, back to the phones at 800-348-2551. A nice hour here with Anthony Liberto of Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs. Rich is in Albany. Rich.
Hi there. Yeah, I was just listening to your show, and I love your show here. I listen to it all the time.
Thanks.
Wait for Fridays to listen to it. But somebody's friend had asked about an easy recipe for a novice baker, and I thought of something that I haven't made it yet, but I've been looking at it. The recipe looks very easy. It's a chocolate lava cake.
Mm.
And I thought maybe you might have some suggestions to maybe, you know, spruce that up a little bit.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Lava
That's
cake is
great.
Romantic.
That's a great one. You know, I'm sorry I'm a little nervous today, but I'm sorry I didn't think of that because that's actually really very easy to make, and a novice baker could certainly make it. And it's also something that's so awesome because if you're having a dinner party, you can make the batter in advance You can put it in your ramekins or your molds, so to speak. You can have them in the refrigerator and then bake them right before dessert. So they're piping hot. They only take about 12 to 14 minutes at about 425, and they're fantastic. And I actually, that's one of my go-to desserts for my clients as a, you know, as a private chef. And I generally will just make a salted caramel and whipped cream and serve them together. And it's spectacular. And it's generally I would say it's an easier dessert.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, Rich, thanks a lot for calling.
But Anthony, isn't the point of a chocolate lava cake that like you cut into it and then the chocolate spills out, it like oozes out of it? So how do you do that so that it stays liquid in the middle but still bakes? Like, what is the process?
Well, sure. You basically, the way you make it is you would take your chocolate and your butter, you'll melt it together and it's separate in a stand mixer, maybe a pastel color stand mixer that
Yay!
You like so much, Jackie.
Yeah.
You're going to whip your sugar and your eggs, and then you just gently fold the melted chocolate butter into the egg mixture and then add a shockingly small amount of flour to that to kind of bring it together. You put it in what we call ramekins, which are little creme brulee cups, or you can use disposable cups if you want. If you're really in a pinch, you can actually use cupcake tins, just spray them very well.
Okay.
And what happens is the oven is very hot, so the outside of the cake will get formed will create a crust with the flour and the chocolate and the butter, and the inside will still be oozy. I like them a little less oozy. I like them sort of spongy. So there's a little bit of softness in the very center, but it actually is a little bit more like a cake than a chocolate soup. But that's just my preference.
Anthony Liberto joins us today from Brimstone Bakery in Saratoga and Sharon Springs, New York. The number is 800-348-2551. Katie is in Cobleskill. Katie, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering about when recipes ask for Dutch cocoa, but I only have regular cocoa. What's the difference?
It's the processing of it. And you can totally, I just use them interchangeably. The Dutch process, I think, is a slightly lighter cocoa. It's not as dark. But I use them interchangeably, generally speaking. I generally use
not Arona. Not as dark in flavor or color?
In color. It's a little bit lighter. Dutch processed cocoa, just to clarify, is generally a little bit lighter than, say, a Valrhona or even a Hershey's chocolate. Tends to be a little darker.
Well, thank you for the call. Let's quickly go over to Helen in New Lebanon. Helen, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
One of the problems I have in baking is when I want to make biscuits, like with strawberry shortcake or something, and I just can't seem to find the right recipe or whatever. It's just they don't rise up. They don't get all nice and puffy so I can split them. Usually I have to serve them one per person and put the strawberries, whatever, on top. So I don't know what's the trick to getting really nice, fluffy biscuits.
Well, that may be a case where you may want to try some pastry flour, quite frankly, because I think you will have a much lighter product as well. You know, your biscuits will be a little higher and a little lighter as well. You may want to try using some pastry flour for that.
Okay. Do you think using a buttermilk is, or yogurt or something like that, more acidic, is helpful?
I do, yes. In my biscuits, I generally use buttermilk. When I'm making like a strawberry shortcake, like a dessert biscuit,
right,
I tend to do that. When I'm doing a savory biscuit, you know, like a traditional biscuit, I use cream. But I will tell you that the cream is obviously, you know this, it has obviously so much more fat than the buttermilk. So the buttermilk is going to make your biscuit a little lighter and flakier as well. And you're obviously using leavening, right? You're using either baking soda or baking powder and some salt.
Helen, thank you very much for the call. We're almost out of time here, believe it or not, Anthony. We have an email.
Wow.
Yep, this email is from Frances. She says, I've been making a lot of bread lately but can never get crispy crust, even with a dish of water in the oven or with a Dutch oven. Do you have any advice, Anthony?
We have the most incredible bread baker who works for us, Gordon Delpit, and he is really the bread guru.
He's the crispy crust.
I, in my career, have not made a ton of breads, but I know really getting the oven super hot. One of the tricks that I was told, and I'm not sure you want to try this at home, kids, but is putting your oven on the clean cycle to get it very hot and use it with a pizza stone, and then baking your bread once the pizza stone gets very hot. That tends to get a very crispy crust.
Yikes.
Crust.
Does that even violate some sort of fire safety laws or anything?
FEMA.
Like I said, I don't know if you want to try this at home,
okay,
but the key, I think using a pizza stone is very good for bread.
All right. Well, Anthony Liberto of Brimstone Bakery, how do we find you guys on the web and on social media?
Oh, great. Well, we're on Instagram, Brimstone Bakery, also on Facebook as well, Brimstone Bakery. We are on the web at, it's a little different, it's www.brimstonebake.com.
All right.
And we're located in Sharon Springs, and we're open tomorrow from 10 to 2.
All right. Well, very good. And we do appreciate you being here, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure, and enjoy the treats, and we'll send you more anytime you want.
I like it.
Support comes from Pike Global Foods, bulk ingredients for makers of chocolates, pastries, confections, and baked goods. Wholesale and online direct at pikeglobalfoods.com. And River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery. rivervalley.coop.
Once again, thanks to Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs for joining us today. Thank you for listening and for calling and for writing in via email. Thanks to Jackie Orchard for eating as much as she possibly could during a one-hour program.
Always.
Thanks to Zach Malloy for hitting the controls all week long. Charlene Knight took the calls. Our producer, yeah, this, the aforementioned Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. That's it for today. That's it for this week on Vox Pop. Have a safe weekend. Wear the masks. Stay 6 feet. Be safe. Have a good weekend. We'll see you.